Hello, I'm Ken McLeod, Principal Teacher at Unfettered Mind. Our website is an ongoing effort to explain Buddhist practice in a way that is clear and accessible to the Western mind without dumbing it down. If you find these teachings useful, please make a donation at unfetteredmind.org/donate so we can continue to maintain and expand the site. Thanks.
Unfettered Mind. Three analogies for karma.
All set. 14th class in the Then and Now series. Tonight, January the 22nd, 2008. Tonight we look at the chapter on karma. Not sure where I saw this or heard about this. If I saw it, it was on some video on the web. But my friend and colleague, Stephen Batchelor, was asked about karma. And he said, well, in the East, karma explains everything. Which means that it explains nothing. I think it's good to keep that in mind as we look into this. In our culture, not in our little Buddhist subsect of this culture, but in our culture as a whole, what's the traditional explanation or characterization might be a better word when things happen that and we have we don't know why
shit happens.
Well, I was thinking of a more traditional one than that. Yeah, fate, punishment, luck, all of these things. Well, that was it, yes. Well, it used to be said, it's God's will. So, there's both a significant difference and an important similarity that I want to take note of. First, one of the perspectives we've been using in this series of classes is, where the name for the class comes from, is a contrast between traditional perspectives and contemporary perspectives, or frameworks, maybe a better word to use. And in a traditional society, one of the characteristics of a traditional culture or society is that there is one overarching worldview that is accepted by everybody. And one of the characteristics of a modern society is that there is not one overarching worldview that is accepted by everybody. Actually, suppose we get into postmodernism, then in the modern society, the overarching worldview is the scientific, rational one. And these two expressions, it's God's will, or it's karma. Remember, teacher that I used to translate for in Vancouver is his way of saying it. When karma come, what can do? Which was often used as an abdication of personal responsibility in a difficult situation. Both of these are expressions of an overarching worldview. And
they aren't really explanations. One of the significant influences on my approach to translation is the philosopher Ludwig Wittgenstein, who is arguably one of the pivotal philosophers of the first half of the 20th century. He paid extremely close attention to the way words were used. For he felt that many philosophical problems were generated by using words in ways that they weren't ordinarily used or used in ordinary language. So they seemed to be questions, but there weren't any questions there. And when I'm going to use the one that's more familiar to our culture. When one uses the phrase, it's God's will, is that an explanation? Let's take a very different case. When you say, look at something, and you say, that's beautiful. Is that a description of a quality that is inherent in the thing that you're looking at? Or is it an expression of your own state of mind? Now, when we say something's beautiful, most of the time it's just an expression of our own state of mind. That's how we relate to it. This has not stopped people arguing about what is beauty for 3,000-4,000 years, and still rages today, just as inconclusive as it's always been. So what state of mind is it's God's will an expression of? This time, use the microphones, please. There's one there. Where's the other one? Right. Okay, good. So what state of mind is that an expression of? When would you use that phrase? I mean, when would that phrase be used? What state of mind is it's God's will an expression of? This time, use the microphones, please. There's one there. Where's the other one? Right. Okay, good. So what state of mind is that an expression of? When would you use that phrase? I mean, when would that phrase be used? Raquel?
When you're sort of relinquishing control.
Okay. When you're relinquishing control. You want to go a little further?
I mean, it could be, that could go in a couple different directions, I guess, from okay. there. It could be because you can't explain it, or because you don't want to take responsibility for it, or...
Okay. Anybody else? Randy?
It seems to me it's often used as an expression of acceptance.
Or trying to move in that direction, okay?
Making an effort there.
Yeah. Anybody else? Art?
Yeah, I was going to say basically the same thing, sort of resignation.
Which is, there's resignation, there's acceptance, and, you know, they're not quite the same thing. Okay. Well, let's take that one a little further. Why resignation? What are you resigning to? It's interesting. In that case, we say, what are we resigning to, not what are we resigning from? Yeah. Well, sometimes, I think at those times, we'd like to resign from something as well.
It's interesting. What's popping into mind are just flashes of things. Control, responsibility, engagement, responding, all of those things. To phrase it differently, it's just a very passive state of mind, a very... almost kind of like hitting the snooze button on an alarm. here's a bad situation or whatever, and it's God's will. Hit the button, go back to sleep, and don't think about it anymore.
That's a little cynical, I think, but Chuck? I'll come back to that.
I think it's more of a way of explaining something that can't be explained very well. Like something bad happened and, to somebody good, and you're trying to say, well, there really isn't any explanation, so it must be God's will.
What do you think, Art? It's interesting. Would you ever use that as something... good happened to a really bad person?
Well, you might. You might think it, at least. Yes, that gives you sort of a warm and fuzzy feeling.
I don't think it has to be... We tend to associate it more with tragic or difficult events, but it can also be applied to positive.
I mean, you said that, and the first thing that comes to mind is like when somebody goes on to accept an award or something on television, and the first person they thank is Jesus.
They score a touchdown in football.
That Jesus somehow has a deeply entrenched investment in the Grammys.
Yeah, we do run into that, which is a kind of naive religion.
Doesn't have anything else to do.
Yes. But we say, or we would use the phrase, it's God's will. When we encounter a situation which we have to meet, we can't do anything about, and we don't understand.
I feel like there's the possibility, and I feel like I've heard that phrase used before, to indicate there are forces bigger than I moving things, which isn't the same thing as I have to meet it. I don't understand it. It can be, but I feel like that shades it in a way that's not necessarily.
Well, I'm going to the when it's actually used. Something is happening. One has to meet it in some way. You don't really understand it. And you can't do much about it. Now, from there, one can attribute that situation to their being forces, but now you're moving into the story. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I see that as a second step. And so it's God's will. Yes, there's this big force out there which is somehow associated with God or what have you. But I'm trying to move to the actual situation where it comes up. You follow?
Yes.
Okay, thanks. And what I want to suggest here is it's an expression of encountering mystery.
I hear that, and it resonates. And so, therefore, if it's that moment of encountering mystery, I guess you're when you said naive approach, I thought that sounded a little harsh. Couldn't it just be cultural to then?
Oh, and I wasn't talking about naive there. I was talking about naive when people thank Jesus for the Grammy. That's what I mean by naive.
But it's the same thing. I mean, they're there, and in that moment, they're like, okay, this is.
But they're into a story.
Right, I see what you're saying.
Okay.
So it's from the mystery to the story that.
And I want to, yes, because what do we do when we encounter mystery? We tell stories. And this is what why art goes to, you know, we become passive, we don't know what to do, et cetera, all the things you were saying. But at the moment, it's encountering the mystery. Just in that moment. And then, why is that so uncomfortable? And there's been a very, very long tradition in human history of coming up with stories to explain what is happening, whether it's forces or God or karma or what have you. Well, why do we do this? Why do you do this, Kara?
I don't believe in that.
You don't believe in God, you don't believe in forces, you don't believe in karma, all of the above?
No, I believe in karma. I just wasn't raised in a Judeo-Christian tradition, and so I never had this, like, all-powerful bearded man who hit the smite button, you know, standing over my head. That's always how I pictured it, like that my friends obsessed over somebody who literally sat at, like, a control screen with, like, a bless and smite, like, and then it was that black and white. I lost my train of thought. What was the question?
Why do we go to stories? What's so uncomfortable about the mystery?
Because no one wants to believe that they're not in control of their own destiny, their own future, their own life, their decisions.
Why not? Why is that so terrifying? Because it's evidently true.
I don't know.
Okay.
I mean, I don't have that fear, or at least I haven't for a while.
And so?
And unfixed. And and there's no me there.
Okay. What's so terrifying about that?
Not necessarily terrifying, but there are many moments where it feels terrifying. It feels.
Yeah. Why?
Because I want to be, you know, because I want to be somebody.
Okay.
Want to be somebody. Want to live forever. Want to get my emotional needs met.
Oh. the usual suspect. Steve.
it means I'm going to die.
That's a little bit of a jump for me. Can you bridge the gap there?
In its most, the essence of a lot of the distraction is, I think, to not have to really, and a lot of control, is to do anything but realize that I'm going to die.
Cease to exist.
Cease to exist. And control, in its boiled down, is a way that I know I exist, and that maybe, and that I don't have to deal with or think about that. And when you start to let go of that, you start to be closer to, I'm actually dying, or I'm going to die, or this is
okay. So there's something very deep here. You can feel. On the one hand, we have the sense of existing, and then periodically in our lives, we encounter the fragility of our existence. That the world can function in a way which we cease to exist very quickly. Right? There's a storm, or a tree falls on us, or get bitten by a snake. And yes, that's happened to somebody recently out in Corona. There's also the sense of wanting somehow to control or have a say in this experience we call life, and then encountering the situations where we realize, well, we don't actually have a say. There's situations we can do absolutely nothing about. Kara?
Is that a choose-your-own-ending book that you've got next to you?
No.
Not?
This one?
Uh-huh.
No. So.
Those are how I explain karma to my friends. Sorry.
Oh, you choose your own ending. Well, you're going exactly where I was just about to go.
Sorry.
That's okay. In theistic religions, one ascribes the mystery to a supreme being and workings of his, her, or its wisdom / compassion / whatever will. In Buddhism, and actually in Hinduism, in Eastern religions, wasn't ascribed to a supreme being. The mystery was ascribed to the world itself, to the functioning of the world, the way the world functions. And it's fairly helpful in understanding this, to consider that an analogy in our culture for the law of karma is the law of gravity. A lot of people project human values onto the universe, and this is also part of the mystery, of course. So a lot of people feel that karma is the force in the universe that makes the universe just. It's the, you know, so if you do bad, you get punished, and if you do good, you get rewarded. this again is a naive view of the world, because it immediately supposes there is good and there is bad, and you end up like a child in this one. That's why I call it naive. And morality that's based on such ideas as, if I do good, then I'll be rewarded, and if I do bad, then I'll be punished. This is a child's approach to morality. Is there any notion of good or bad connected with karma, with gravity? No. You know, I hold something up, I let it go, it falls. Exactly the same force is responsible for the Earth going around the Sun, for the formation of galaxies, etc. So it works on all scales, except when you get really, really small, then you get into the nuclear forces and so forth. But it works. It explains a lot of things. Can you ignore gravity? At your peril. Yes. There's one series of cartoons in which gravity is regularly ignored. It's the Roadrunner cartoons, yes. But you will always notice that Wile E. Coyote can ignore gravity until he realizes he's ignoring gravity. Then it catches up with him really quickly. I think this also applies to karma. So that's one important analogy. It isn't a force or a law which provides balance to the universe that renders justice. These are all human projections of things that we value in human society, and that's it doesn't obtain out there. There's another analogy which is also very important. And that's the notion of evolution. We usually think of karma as cause and effect. That's how it's translated. But our notion of cause and effect, the popular notion that we're all familiar with is, like, if I put my foot on the accelerator, the car goes, I cause the car to go faster, and if I put my foot on the brake, I cause the car to slow down. So there's a cause, there's a specific action, and there is a specific effect, and there's a connection between cause and effect. I have a friend who's works at one of the big pharmaceutical companies. The ones are into bioengineering. And one of the most difficult things to prove, particularly in this arena, is cause and effect. The standard saying in here is correlation is not causation. So you may have two things which occur together, or when this occurs, this one occurs. But to establish that this actually causes that is a very, very difficult research. And you have to construct quite careful experiments to do that. And from the scientific point of view, if you can establish a causation, that's really useful, because then you know the circumstances which predict, which you can predict that certain things are going to happen. That's very helpful. But this is not what karma refers to at all. I've taught karma a number of times, and I've always been troubled by this translation of cause and effect, because it just didn't correlate very well with the explanations that I received about, which I'm going to go into in a moment. But the interpretation of it as cause and effect allows another form of naive interpretation to arise. And we get this, you know, a bus full of young kids goes over a cliff and everybody's killed. Why did that happen? Because in the last life, all of those kids were murderers. How many of you read James Joyce's Portrait of an Artist as a Young Man? No, it's a great book. He comes to the conclusion at the end, or somewhere in the book, that Catholicism is an inhuman, it's inhumanly cruel. It's inhumanly cruel because it says you're born into this world eternally damned and you can't, and you didn't have any choice about it. So this is just crazy. I have a similar view of this explanation of why those kids died. It presupposes that they did something in a previous life. And there's a whole judgment there. And it's unknowable. But that kind of, they did this, therefore they experienced this, cause and effect, again, is a way to try to get out of the mystery of things. Parents lost their children. It's a great tragedy. That's one of those events which we have to meet but cannot understand. And then there's a tendency to ascribe it to forces or the operation of beings or some kind of process which is a way of understanding it other than that it just happened. So, when...
Unfettered Mind retains all rights to these podcasts. If you wish to use part or a whole podcast, please send an email to podcasts@unfetteredmind.org.